Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. My name is Amy Wheeler, and I'll be your host today. Oftentimes, I like to do solo episodes about things that I'm learning and discovering in yoga, yoga therapy, Ayurveda, and beyond. And I just had this itch to share with you something that I learned yesterday, and it was a co-creative process. I call them students, but I don't really feel like I'm their teacher. I'll just say I facilitate a group of wise, wonderful people that all have so much to share, so much goodness, so much life experience. So I'm not really teaching them anything, and if anything, I'm learning from them. And I wanted to share this with you because I think it is so profound. And, you know, if some of you are listening to this on audio, but in a few months, we always release the YouTube version of this. I'm going to hold up my notes, which are like on the back of an envelope. It's kind of funny, but this is what I'm using right here, this little envelope with chicken scratches all over it. I'm using this as our guide for today to remind myself what it was that these wise, wonderful people came up with yesterday. So the topic was polyvagal theory and co-regulation, working with another human, first and foremost, to create a safe space within them. They're feeling safe within themselves, but also externally. What does the safe space need to be? And then the space between the practitioner and the client, there's something that happens between the two of them. I'll call that the third space, that safety needs to be happening there too. So that was kind of our discussion that we were having about how to help people feel safe inside themselves, how to create a safe external environment. And then that co-created space between the two of us. How do we try to work towards safety in that space? And these people are people that have been therapists for decades, yoga people for decades. Like, these are very wise people. So I'm just going to read through our list and kind of explain each point about creating safety. And I think most of you know that that's the prerequisite. That is the bottom line of healing and coming together to help people be empowered to heal themselves. And I've been playing around with artificial intelligence. They have these online GPT chat therapists now, and the research coming out is pretty phenomenal, saying that like 80 to 90% of people who are using artificial intelligence to talk with them about their problems, about their suffering, are finding great relief, and it's free. And that got me thinking, like, what is that about? How can that replace a human? That seems not okay. Like, I have a genuine bias. Like, what is that about? And, you know, they broke it down into different categories about if you're looking for more informational strategies about how to deal with XYZ problem, that AI could be pretty good at that, to help you think through strategies or to maybe even process some of your complex emotions. But that the human element, where you're feeling like this other person cares about you, has empathy for you, maybe it's not as strong. It's like people know when they're talking to a machine, right? But here's the crux of the issue, and this is where AI connects to our topic of today of safety. In both cases, these wise therapists and yoga people that I was talking to yesterday, and the newest research on artificial intelligence therapy, basically, in both instances, the number one thing that people, clients, are telling us that is important to their safety, you ready for it? Non-judgmental. They want a place where they can go and not be judged, not be analyzed, not be picked apart, not be told how they have to do better, not be told, here's your solution, you should be doing it this way, or here's why you're messed up, here's what you're doing to yourself. People don't want to be judged. And in fact, when you think about using artificial intelligence as a therapist, and again, I'm not recommending it, I'm just curious about it, it could be that we don't feel judged by a machine because we know it's not a real human. And therefore, we can say what's really on our minds without feeling judged. And it's sad that we pay humans to give us therapy, but then we don't go and be completely honest, or that we go to a yoga therapist and we can't even say what's real for fear of being judged. Like, what kind of work are we doing then? Right? So, in one way, I think it's kind of interesting to think about how could we as practitioners, even as human beings on the planet, as friends, as mothers, as daughters, as, colleagues, what would it take for us to not be so judgmental and categorizing people and labeling them and dissecting them and diagnosing them? And, like, nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. So that was the number one thing that when I was talking to this group that I was facilitating yesterday, they want people to work with them that are not judging them.
Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. I'm Amy Wheeler, your host. Are you needing to earn some continuing education units? Well, we have the exact thing for you. Every single Monday night, we have a Monday night clinic where we practice postures, breathing, and meditation towards a very specific theme of the month. And then we stay afterwards and we talk about the theory of why we chose what we did for that particular practice. We give you a completion certificate, which you can turn into your continuing education body. And we're growing all the time. We have a wonderful community. You can do this live with us online, or you can do it through a recording. Go to www.theoptimalstate.com and check out the Monday Night Clinic, and we would love to see you there.
Here's the interesting part, and I've always said this, so it was so good to hear it from others reflected back towards me. Judgments come in positive statements and negative statements. We think of judgments as, oh, you're not looking well today, or oh my gosh, you're looking tired, or why did you do that? What were you thinking? But we never think of the flip side of you're looking so well. What are you doing differently? Wow, you're looking radiant. Like, I think a lot of us don't think of that as a judgment, but what I heard from these wise colleagues, and I agree with it. Many of you have heard me say this already. Even commenting on people's positive features or their improvements or our perceived improvements still feels judgmental. It still feels like someone's examining you, looking at you, ranking you, making a judgment about you that you look better this time than I saw you last time. Do you see? And I think we all agreed in our group that it's really hard to not say thank you and take that as a compliment. But a lot of times the client or ourselves are left feeling like, well, what did they think of me before? What are they comparing it to? And oh my gosh, well, I actually lost weight because I've been really ill. What does that mean about my normal weight? Right? So just something to think about. The number one thing in both this research on AI as well as human therapy and yoga therapy is to not make judgments because maybe you even feel differently than that person. Recently, I've been told over and over, oh, your hair looks so good. And I don't particularly care for my hair up in this little bun thing that I have, but everywhere I go, people tell me that looks so good. And there's a part of me that's kind of fighting that, like, well, what if I don't want to have my hair up like this? It's not your business. It's my hair, right? So they're meaning it as a compliment. And I'm kind of thinking, well, that isn't what I want. That is not what I like when I look in the mirror. So I'm just trying to give you examples of allowing our clients, our children, our parents to decide what is their authentic self, what feels good to them, without this external influence of spouting off positive things, negative things. It centers you. I think you look better with your hair up like that, right? doesn't matter what you think of your own hair, I think this, so you should take my judgment. So I don't know. I just want us to think about this. I know this is going to be a little off-putting to some people listening to this. You're probably already ready to turn this off and thinking, oh, good God, we can't even give a compliment anymore. I understand that. And I would just ask us to reflect on it because, as I said, the cumulative experience of these wise therapists, it's over hundreds of years, by the way, that the people that were in the group, and when you add up how long they've been working with people, this is what they told me. And this is what people are saying why they like AI, because they're not feeling judged positively or negatively. They don't have to put on a mask. They don't have to try to show up and prop themselves up. They can just be who they are. So I think it's something worthy of reflection, even if you have a different opinion. All right, another thing that apparently makes people feel safe, according to the group of wise people I talk to, is someone that can be comfortable with periods of silence. Just sitting. Nothing's being said, and there's no urgency to fill that space. That when the words come, when the next thought comes, it can be spoken. We're not trying to be silent. But if we just want to sit and softly cry for 2 or 3 or 5 minutes without any words, that's trust building, that the space is strong enough and stable enough to hold those emotions and just let the silence be. Another one that I think is so interesting is people who are willing and able to have a rupture in the relationship. And in this case, it might be a parent or a child. It might be a grandparent and grandchild. It could be therapist and client. Let's just any relationship. A relationship that's strong enough to have a rupture and then get repaired. As opposed to we have a rupture, we separate, we just go away, we never talk about it, and then we kind of shove all the icky stuff under the rug. And then 2 weeks later or 2 months later or a year later, we say hello and we pretend it never happened. Or maybe we just never say hello again. Maybe that's the end of the relationship. So people feel safe with others who can have the rupture, can be authentic, and say what's real for them, and then come back and talk about it and work through that rupture together, that actually builds safety. Another one is people who have what I'm going to call unconditional positive regard, meaning that they're not telling themselves stories about why you're bad, why you did it wrong, why this relationship isn't working, or why you're acting the way you're acting. Instead, it's like, wow, all right, that wasn't comfortable. Maybe they're having a bad day. Maybe there's something going on for that person that we don't know about. Maybe there's a personal issue that's impacting them in this moment that has nothing to do with me, and I'm not going to take it personally until they tell me it's about me. I'm going to assume the best. And maybe next time I see them or talk to them, they'll be having a better day. And to not tell ourselves stories about why we don't feel connected immediately every single time we see someone. So having that unconditional positive regard and giving people space to be human. And it's a little bit of a rub because maybe you did do something wrong. Maybe there is a reason they're not wanting to talk to you. But if it's a true relationship, that will come out over time. That will hopefully be expressed and discussed, just like we said, the rupture and the repair. And sometimes we need to give it a little space and time to emerge and feel safe enough to even have that rupture and repair. In the meantime, just holding unconditional positive regard for yourself and for the other. Don't tell ourselves stories that may or may not be true. Don't make assumptions that may or may not be true. So when people can do that, other people feel safe in their presence.
My name is Amy Wheeler. I'm the host of the Yoga Therapy Hour, but also the creator of a mobile app that's based on the gunas of yoga and Ayurveda. It's the first of a kind, and we'd love for you to try it for free. The app is called The Optimal State, and it tracks the state of your gunas and then it gives you therapeutic interventions. Now we're starting to add Dharma talks as well as Yoga Nidra. And we think these are wonderful ways that you can do some self-care and take care of yourself on a regular basis. So come join us, the Optimal State app. We'd love to see you over there too.
Another one that I was told from this WISE group was people who are very transparent and kind of direct, like, here's what's happening for me. Here's why I'm doing this. Full transparency. I need to let you know I'm having a hard time, or today has not been a great day for me. It has nothing to do with you. That this kind of direct transparency makes people feel safe, because then they can have that unconditional positive regard. They don't have to feel like, oh, did I do something wrong? Now, I would argue the flip side of this, that there are some people that are really uncomfortable with transparency and directness. You know, maybe in certain instances that is not safe for people because it's not their way. They like to be more subtle. I can even imagine, you know, when I went to Japan, they're much more subtle. They wouldn't be that transparent and direct, a lot of the people that I met. And maybe I was a little too much for them, quite honestly. But I think we can sense that when the person would prefer not to be that transparent or direct and maybe respond in a different way when needed. All right, another quality of safety that these WISE therapists came up with is somebody that can be very open to new experiences, open to new ways of thinking, open to new ways of being, that it's not rigid, it's not black and white, it's not right and wrong, that they can live with a little bit more of the gray area and the unknown, with the idea that beautiful things can emerge from that space. We don't have to lock down on everything and be so controlling and get everything just the way we like it and kind of close down like this is how we run our life, but rather someone that's playful and open and willing and spontaneous and ready to see what emerges. So that openness and that ability to take in new adventures, new people, new thoughts is a very highly, you know, safety type quality, according to the students or the people that I worked with yesterday. All right, another one. I'm just working my way down the list here. People who are clear in their communication apparently feel more safe to others. People who are direct, who say, here's what's happening for me, you're not meeting my needs, or you are meeting my needs, that there's no guesswork, that they just show up authentically, they say what they need to say in a kind way, but very clear, transparent, and direct, so that there's no guessing, there's no wondering, just clear communication. Can we put this out on the table so that we can look at this together and be with what is? So we don't have to make up stories in our own heads about what the other one is thinking or doing. All right, another trait or quality that apparently creates safety in relationships is the ability to have self-awareness, to notice when you are triggered, to notice when you're joyful, to notice when you're feeling off or when you're feeling maybe dysregulated. So there's a self-awareness piece that you can check in with yourself and know what you're feeling and maybe even name or articulate that feeling. But then there's also a second piece, self-reflective. Okay, here's what I'm feeling. I can name it. I can feel it. I get it. And why am I feeling that way? Or what is coming up for me that I'm feeling so triggered? So there's a self-reflection and self-responsibility, taking responsibility. And then once you do all that work, coming back with clear, open, authentic communication and transparency and just being real. I don't know about you, but when I listen to all these, I just realize how rare this is that people in our lives create this kind of safety for us. And that they actually do that deep work of self-awareness, self-reflection, you know, correction, and then maybe even repair of the relationship. All right, another one, another quality is someone who is calm and regulated. regulated in how they approach life, their structures, their rituals, their ways of showing up is consistent. They are calm. They're not all over the place. It's not like you don't know if Dr. Jekyll or Mr. Hyde is going to show up. You kind of know who that person is going to show up on any given day, and you know they're going to be calm and regulated in their own nervous system, which goes back to the rituals and routines of our lives, that we can really count on someone who kind of has figured out how to manifest a well-regulated life and a life that brings you to a place where you can show up that way, calm, not as a phony mask, but literally because you feel good most of the time. So that's a whole can of worms there. Like, how do we create that life for ourselves so that others can feel safe and know what to expect when we show up? All right, another one, another quality is the quality of one's voice. Meaning, is it melodic? Does it not get on our nerves? Did it feel too high or too low? Is the person breathing when they're speaking? Are there natural gaps between thoughts? A little bit of space? As opposed to talking really fast and you can't even figure out what all the words are before the next word is coming, and then you can't have a conversation because they're talking so fast that you can't get a word in. You see the difference there? The safety versus lack of safety. And I always say a conversation should be like a tennis game where we're volleying the tennis ball to one side of the net. That person gets to have it for a little bit, volleying it back. That should be what a conversation is where we're kind of going back and forth and no person is dominating the conversation. So other things about voice that kind of go back into polyvagal theory is a well-regulated voice that sounds calm to people, that makes them feel calm, both in pace, in tone, in silence. All of it matters. The voice matters. And I don't think that means we put on our therapist voice or our yoga teacher voice, and then as soon as we get out of class, we turn into this other person. Like, everybody knows when they hear a yoga voice, and it's really annoying. It's more that the voice is an expression of what's already in the heart, and therefore what's in the heart is coming out through the voice. And that heart is a stable, calm, open, transparent heart that has positive, unconditional regard for people. And that is reflected in the voice. All right, in a similar vein, people feel safe when they are around someone who is a good listener. And this was such an interesting discussion that we had, because I think when we think of good listening, we think of someone who can paraphrase, somebody who says, this kind of active listening so that we know that they're hearing us and they want us to know that they heard us. Someone who tends to stay focused during the conversation, make eye contact, use proper nonverbals. But what I think is interesting about the discussion around this in safety is that a lot of these therapists said that when we kind of depend on those guidelines of active listening and shaking your head and making the nonverbal gesture, that it's okay, but it's not as good as a genuine response. You know, that's what we learned in school. So now we've become an active listener, that a little bit of that actually makes people not feel safe, that it's a more authentic connection where you can be with silence and then you can say, wow, I'm curious about this aspect of what you said. So kind of bringing it into your own heart, into your own language as you play tennis and you are a good listener, but not doing it through kind of this rote memorization of what it means to be an active listener. You know, sometimes we're listening so hard and we're trying so hard that we're actually interrupting the person and their thoughts by giving these kind of verbal, So kind of backing off that a little bit so that you're not rushing the person who's speaking. You're not making them pay attention to you while they're speaking. And I know this is quite subtle work, but it's interesting to think about. And then another part of this is listening to understand, not listening while thinking about the next thing you want to say. That's a no-no. That does not make people feel safe. So just really listening to understand and kind of holding your thoughts back and say, yeah, I'm not going to think about my next sentence and what I want to say. I'm just going to be with them. Now, where that gets difficult is if you do that over and over and over, sometimes people don't play tennis with you. They take up the entire conversation and then you're left feeling like, wow, that was not okay. I didn't get a word in. They didn't ask anything about me. Well, that's good information to have, that if there's a person who's not safe in your life, who isn't genuinely interested in hearing anything about you, who doesn't play tennis with you, meaning doesn't also offer the safety of those good listening skills, well, have clarity about that. Everything gets put in a place in life. Maybe they don't get as much access to you, and maybe you don't put as much effort into cultivating that relationship because it's not a safe relationship. That's for you to decide. All right, another thing that this group came up with about safety is they feel more safe when the person is very attuned to where they are in any given moment and can almost mirror that back. I think a lot of times we think of a good therapist or even a good yoga therapist as someone who's just completely sattvic, stable, calm. But that can be a little unnerving, according to these wise therapists. If someone's really triggered, if they're really having a moment, maybe they're really upset about something, or maybe they're really happy. You know, it could be either end of the spectrum, and the person is just sitting there like a calm lotus flower on the waters of life. But instead, kind of mirroring back, like, oh, I feel that. I feel angry for you, or I feel so joyful that you're having this amazing experience, and kind of mirroring and matching in a genuine way, not a fake way, but a genuine way. It's almost like having empathy and feeling what they're feeling, while there's a whole nother part of you that also knows what it means to be sattvic and come into a more sattvic place. So it's not that we just get to jump in and, you know, go wherever they're going, but there's kind of two parts of us at the same time, one that's matching and then the quieter observer within us as the practitioner or the friend or the, you know, grandchild that is also resting peacefully at the same time. So interesting to think about. All right. Another thing that makes people feel safe is consistency in how people show up, the rituals of how they show up, timing, being on time, making appointments, answering emails in a very timely manner, kind of a rhythm of the relationship that you know you can expect this as you work together. And it's not going to be like they answer an email in 2 hours one day and then a week another day, or that you have to have this feeling like, is my therapist going to show up today? Sometimes she misses appointments. Like, nobody wants that. Nobody feels safe. The client has prepared. They've probably thought about what's going to happen for a couple of days before. They're ready. They're getting their system, their body, mind, spirit system ready to participate deeply with their yoga therapist or their psychotherapist. And then boom, nobody shows up. It's not just like, oh, they missed an appointment. It's something very deep because people oftentimes do prepare mentally, emotionally, and spiritually for an experience that then doesn't get to have fruition and follow through. And of course, we all have missed an appointment. Yes, we have. But we should apologize profusely. We should let them know what happened. And it shouldn't be like, I overslept. No, that's not okay. If we miss an appointment, there's a real reason. And you may not get into details, but you need to let your client know the severity of what happened so that they don't feel like you blew them off. And I would say in all relationships, this is respectful of people's time and energy. So I just did that the other day. I thought I had the day off and I didn't, and I missed an appointment, and I wrote an email explaining that I do value you. You know, it wasn't with a client, it was a meeting, but really showing them, like, I'm a consistent person. This is not my norm. And I really, really apologize that this has happened and it won't happen again. I will do my best not to make this happen again. So, consistency. Another one is, we're getting to the end here. I know these are a lot. People don't feel safe with other people when, and I'm going to put this in air quotes, they eject, meaning things get hard and they just go away. They disappear, never to be heard from again, or not for a long time. That does not promote safety. And I understand some people eject because they're saying, I don't want to be in relationship with you. We are done. That is a message. But there's a lot of others that consistently, with many, many relationships, eject. That's their pattern. And that's different than I'm ejecting because I'm taking care of myself and I don't want to be in relationship with you. And I think that could even be stated. I wish you well, but we are no longer going to be together. This is a necessary ending, which, by the way, there's a great book out there called Necessary Endings, which I highly recommend that everyone should read. All right, another one that makes people feel safe, and this is so personal. People who have courage to stand up, to call out injustice, maybe even to be the whistleblower at their own expense as a way to protect others. Whistleblowers in general are trusted by the people that they are trying to support. And I think people who have the courage to stand up and say, this is wrong, and I'm willing to sacrifice myself for the greater good because nobody else is saying it, so I've got to say it. I've been watching a few real courageous yoga leaders on Facebook, and what they're willing to put out there at their own safety could be in jeopardy with what they're writing about on Facebook. And they're still doing it. And gosh, we just have so much respect for that, so much courage. And that builds trust, that builds authenticity. And you know that that person, you feel safe with them, you feel safer. And, you know, that's not to say they don't have flaws also, but there's something about seeing a courageous person that tends to make others feel safe in their presence. Like, if there's an injustice, they'll stand up for me. They won't be a bystander and just watch it happen. So that's kind of interesting. The reason I say it's personal is because I've done that so many times and I have the feeling like I'm the bad person. Why did I do that? Everyone's going to hate me. They're going to think I'm the troublemaker. And after listening to these wise friends yesterday, I realized, oh, maybe that's just a story. Maybe the truth is that people would have more respect and more safety because one is willing to have courage in the face of difficult times. So that was an eye-opening one to me. All right. So there's a few others here. Let's see. People who have a variety of perspectives, who are not rigid, and they just have one way of being, and it's my way or the highway. And if you don't agree with me or don't believe anything I tell you, then you're wrong and I'm right. That does not create safety. People want to know that you're a complex, whole person with a variety of perspectives. And of course, you have your own values and you have your own things that you believe in, but you're also willing to listen to others' values and what they believe in, and maybe even understand a perspective that's a little bit different than your own. I had a friend once that said, Amy, I have learned that there's a lot of people out there that don't believe like you and I believe, and that's okay too. I was kind of like, the resistant part of me is like, no, it's not okay. But I've really taken that to heart. She's a wise woman, just asking me to open myself up to perspectives other than my own. All right. Another thing that people said makes them feel unsafe, so we can reverse that for gaining more safety, is people who overtake the conversation and they talk too much and they don't play tennis. That doesn't feel safe. We've already discussed that. But another thing is info dumping. They've done all this research, they have all these facts and figures, and they're going to dump it into the conversation and not really be aware of how they're impacting others. Not being aware that they're not volleying the conversation back and forth, not being aware that they're dominating with their information dumping. That makes people feel unsafe and not connected. So that's interesting. Sometimes I think we think we're educating others and that they want to hear all of this information, but I think unless they're asking for it, tell me more. Oh, I have a question I've been wanting to ask you. What about XYZ? I know you're an expert in this area. If they say that, of course, information dump all over the place. But if they're not requesting it and it's just in a normal conversation, a lot of times it can be too intense. Like people weren't expecting to get all this information dumped onto them with this much intensity and vigor. And it kind of makes people feel unsafe and that you're not aware of how you're making them feel. So that is one. All right, I got a couple more here. Hope I'm not overwhelming you with my information dumping today. Another one is people feel safe with the familiar. They're going to come in. You're going to offer some tea. You're going to sit in that chair over there. You're going to talk for 5 to 7 minutes. Then you're going to go into the deeper work. At 5 minutes to the hour, we're going to hear the therapist say, we're getting close to the end. We're starting to wrap things up. And then they see you to the door and they tell you, you know, I'll see you next time. Like that kind of familiarity of the space and the patterns, the expectations, the surroundings, it's almost like a ritual and it makes people feel safe. So something to think about. I really like that one. Another thing that makes people feel safe is when you give them respect and you let them know, even if I don't agree with you on everything, I still respect you as a human being. I still will offer a follow-up email to say thank you. I will still offer acknowledgement of what you've said. I will still make an effort to be in connection and community with you, even if we're not 100% on the same page. Even if I disagree with you, even if I'm angry at you, I will still respect you. That is so interesting. You know, even if you think of a therapist, maybe they're working with a client that has actually done some really horrible things. Can that therapist be non-judgmental and respectful? Wow, that's big in all of our relationships. Can we be respectful even if we're upset, disappointed, or don't agree? Getting close to the end, here we go. Can we, here's another one, accept people as they are in this moment, not trying to change them, not trying to fix them, but rather, can we respect you for who you are, just as you are, just showing up? So that's a beautiful one. And I think that's close to the end. I think the last one is having sacred space together. That when we come together, it will be a sacred moment. Both parties will have prepared themselves mentally, emotionally, spiritually. They will come in calm. And the space, the actual space together, whether it's on the Zoom or in a home or at a business, that there's a sacred quality to this meeting. All right. Well, I think I have given you so much to think about in terms of safety and how to create that safety and relationship in your life. And I'm going to just leave it at that today. I really enjoyed this conversation, both with the wise people that shared all of this with me, and now I'm sharing it with you. And I hope that somehow it adds some goodness, some positivity to your life. All right. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We are really, really blessed to have you all as listeners. We can feel the energy coming back, the gratitude, and we want you to know how much we appreciate you out there in the audience. Every little bit of goodness that we share with you from our guests goes into your ears, down into your heart. I am hopeful that it radiates out into the world. That is the goal. So thank you for being our dependable and reliable listeners. You have no idea how much we appreciate seeing those downloads every single week. Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We wish you a wonderful week. We hope that somehow, in a small way, we've contributed to your well-being so that you can go out and share that well-being with others. That's what life is all about, bringing in the goodness through you and then shining it out to the world. We need you more than ever. So let's all get out there, do good, be good, and have a great week.